This morning, I hope that you are already encountering the living God in worship. And as we open His Word this morning, we're going to a very familiar story. This is a story that is known even in our culture. This story is referenced over and over again. A New York Times best-selling book was just out in the last couple years by Malcolm Gladwell called David and Goliath. This is a very well-known story in our culture. And so we're excited to preach it this morning. It's either a really easy sermon to preach because it's such a soft pitch, slow pitch. It's like, here it is. Or it's going to be a really hard one because, man, when you whiff in softball, it's bad. Okay, so hopefully this message God visits us this morning and through His Word. So I want to tell you a story about something that happened this last week. I was taking my boys to this trampoline park, Sky Zone, I think it's called, in Cedar Rapids, and they have this dodgeball area, and so trampolines, and I want to show you a picture of what it came down to, this game. I mean, it's just packed with middle school kids, junior hires. I'm there on one side. I get pegged by some junior high kid, you know, and I'm out, and it comes down to this. Just look at this picture, okay? All right, my son Jet versus these three junior hires, and they are like, bring it. We are going to take you down. Now, who in this room, don't raise your hand if it's you, but who is rooting for the junior hires? Who wants the junior hires just to smoke my five-year-old son? If that's you, you've got a problem, okay? You are cruel and sadistic. Now, this Jet, I've got a video which I'm not going to play, but the video is him like throwing the ball one at a time and he can't even get it to their feet, okay? It's pretty hilarious, but here's Jet. Now, here's the thing. We all know this, right? That we have an obligation to root for Jet because he's the underdog. You can take the picture down. We love underdogs, don't we? Don't you just want Jet to take those arrogant junior hires down? But we all know it's not going to happen. Okay, this morning is one of the most famous stories of the underdog that takes down the giant. Now, here it is. But what we're going to find out, and you know we love these stories. They're all over our culture. I mean, it's Harry Potter. It's Rocky Balboa. It's the Karate Kid, Daniel-san, you know, taken down. It's all over. And we know we have this obligation to root for the underdog. We're fascinated by these stories. But here's what we're going to find out. The most famous underdog story, as it turns out, is really not an underdog story at all. In fact, if you were to tell that to David, the guy who is the underdog in the story, that he was an underdog, I think he would be offended. Let's look at this story and see why. And I want to ask this question, and I want this question to be in your mind as we go through this text. Why is David so confident? That would be like my son Jet. Like, I'm taking you guys down. You're going down. Wouldn't that just be blind, stupid optimism? Let's ask that question as we go through this text. Why was David so confident? So 1 Samuel 17. If you're new to the Bible, 1 Samuel is toward the beginning of your Bible. You can also find it easily if you have a Bible app or something. So now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. 1 Samuel 17:1. And they were gathered at Soko, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Soko and Azekah in Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Okay, so I just talked to one of my good friends, Ed Noble, who was just in Israel this last year. And he's like, Mark, I went to the Valley of Elah, and it is exactly what you would picture. It's like two hills, just this valley, and on either side you had the Philistines and the Israelites. Okay, here's a picture of the Valley of Elah. Okay, and this is a wadi that goes through. That's like a creek that only has water in it when it rains and in rainy season. So this is my friend in this valley where the Philistines would have been on one side, Israel on the other. And now at this point, you can imagine in this warfare in this day with both people on either side, nobody wanted to go down into the valley because to go up to try to fight uphill was a huge disadvantage. So we've got a stalemate going on here. Probably 3,000 to 5,000 people on either side of the valley. Don't know exactly how many, but just huge armies on both sides in verse 4. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, let me just explain what's this giant that has come down to this valley, Goliath. He's probably somewhere between 7 and 9 feet tall. This guy's huge. In recent archaeological digs, they found these like Philistine women that are 7 feet tall. Okay, so I don't know, these Philistines are just tall people. But this guy, Goliath, is huge. He comes down and he's wearing his armor. It's like scaled armor, like metal plates. His coat, his armored coat, weighs over 120 pounds. He's got this huge sword that he carries on his back, and he's carrying this spear. And on the end of a spear, the spearhead weighs 15 pounds. He's got a shield bearer that comes out, this huge rectangular shield. He's got bronze armor all the way down his legs. So this guy is a bad mamma jamma. Verse 10, and the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Doesn't that response sound reasonable? Isn't that the right response of fear? If you're staring at that giant and they're like, send one guy down to fight. And I'm taking him down. He was a great champion, it said. Now insert into this moment David. David walks up. Now David was a shepherd. We already know from last week, as Drew taught chapter 16, David had been anointed king, but his dad, when he was setting out all of his sons for possible kings, Samuel, by the man, passed them up, and he gets to number 7, and after 7, he's like, hey, none of these guys are the kings, are going to be king. Don't you have any other sons? And his dad's like, wait, oh yeah, there is one more, but he's out with the sheep. It says that at this time, Jesse is an old man, so it's possible that David was like an accident child. We don't know for sure, but possible. He's like, oh yeah, the accident. He's out watching the sheep. I mean, your own dad has forgotten that you exist. And so at this point, his dad's just given David, little David, instructions. He's probably a teenager, maybe 15 years old. And so he's saying, David, I need you to take some food to the troops. And so this isn't like in our military, in our day and age, our soldiers get fed by the government, right? But not back then. It's like, bring your own food to the war. And so David shows up and he's delivering food to his brothers. His three oldest brothers must have been great soldiers in this army because they're mentioned here. Three of them are in the fight. David rolls up. He's going back and forth to watch his sheep. This is like 14 miles outside of Jerusalem. So this would have been quite a trek for him to carry all this food to the front lines. So listen to what happens. 40 days, this man Goliath comes down to taunt the Israelites. Now, 40 is an important number in the Bible. It's symbolic of a period of testing. You remember the story of Moses. Moses spent 40 years in the wilderness, 40 years in Egypt, then 40 years in the wilderness, God preparing him. Jesus spent 40 days fasting before he started his ministry. The spies, when they were going to look at the land, they spent 40 days looking at the land. Okay, so 40 days, this Philistine comes down and he's taunting Israel. Look at verse 23. So as David was talking with these guys on the front lines, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. So my friend Ed, he said, I stood where Goliath stood and I read this chapter. And all of our friends on the, he's like, I read it as loud as I'm talking to you right now. So he's just reading 1 Samuel 17. He's like, everyone on the hill could hear me perfectly. I mean, the acoustics just traveled so well. And so here's David showing up, delivering the food. And all of a sudden he hears this voice down in the valley and it's Goliath. Verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And David finds out that Saul has said, I'll pay anyone to take down, big time cash reward for the guy who steps up and takes this giant down. And then he even offers him his daughter in marriage, and he offers him tax-free living in the kingdom. And no one wants to do it because they know that's not going to do me any good if I'm dead. So David, verse 26, he said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David continually refers to this guy as uncircumcised. What does he mean by this? If you don't know what circumcision is, go look it up on Google or something. Don't do a Google image. But so why does he call this guy uncircumcised? How did he know? I mean, I don't think Goliath flashed him, okay? What he's saying is, listen, we've got a covenant here, Israel. We got some promises. We got God on our side. And we got this fool over here who's mocking our God. This is a spiritual battle going on here. And we're just standing by watching as this guy mocks our God. God made a promise to Abram. We are God's people. What are we doing letting this guy assault the glory of God? You're just going to sit by and watch. And he calls God Yahweh Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts. He's the God of angel armies. David sees there's a God who's in charge of the armies of heaven. He's on our side, and you guys are sitting here trembling. It's like David is reading from a completely different script. Isn't he? He's reading a different story. He's seeing something different. So, one by one, and we see in this text, his brother Eliab is like, David, I know why you came. You came just to see a fight. You came just to watch people get killed. Why don't you get back to watching the sheep? You've got evil that's filled your heart. And then, so his oldest brother is mocking him, his own family members. We know that his dad already knew his son had been anointed king, which certainly meant military leader, doesn't even let his son come and fight in the battle. And then you've got this interaction with Saul, the king. David's like, I can do it. And Saul's like, you're just a youth. This guy's been killing people since he's a youth. And here you are, this little teenager. You haven't even filled out yet. And you think you're going to take him down? Who do you think you are? It's like they're handing him a different script. It's the conventional wisdom script. It's like, dude, who are you? Who do you think you are? 34, verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or bear or took a and took a lamb from the flock. I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. And your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. This is not the main point of the message, but let me just say this. God had prepared David for this moment. David had a track record of trusting God in the wilderness when nobody was watching him. He's faced Goliath before in the wilderness to rescue a sheep when there wasn't a cash reward for conquering a lion. There wasn't a crowd of people to applaud. David had been trusting God all alone in the wilderness, watching the sheep. He's like, I don't need your armor, Saul, because Saul had one of the only sets of armor. We already know that the Philistines, they were incredible. They had all the iron. In fact, in the iron and steel, the Israelites had to go to the Philistines to have them make plows for them because they had no resources to do this. So the Philistine had all this armor. And so Saul's like, hey, we have one set, David, put it on. Saul's super tall. David's this little guy. He's like, it doesn't fit. Listen, I got this. So he goes out to the creek, to this little stream it's this wadi with no water in it. He picks up 5 stones, it says. And it's hard for us to imagine this in Iowa because we just have dirt and like little pebbles. Like, man, how did he take him down? This is, my friend grabbed a stone from this wadi. Look at that thing. He picked up 5 stones about that size. So we're not talking like a little pebble. We're saying if this thing hits you in the face, something bad is going to happen, all right? So he grabs 5 of them because, you know, think about it. He knows that God's going to take him down, but he doesn't know how many stones it's going to take. He's like, this could be a fight. Look at verse 41. And the Philistine moved forward and came near David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. Ruddy's like a little redhead, right? He's this little guy. It's like I can't fight this kid. He's kind of cute. Sweet little kid coming at me, verse 43. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. This isn't just a fight. This is a holy war. We've got a spiritual element to this conflict. And he's cursing God by his own gods. And he says to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. This is almost like the voice of Satan. Now he's confronted his dad who had forsaken him, his brother mocking him, King Saul saying, you're just a youth. And now the giant himself is saying, who do you think you are? This is the script that David's been handed. It's the who do you think you are script. These are quotes from a psalm that David wrote, Psalm 27. Look at this on the screen. He says in Psalm 27, when evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, in this will I be confident. Though my father and mother forsake me. David's saying, in all of these circumstances, if I have an army around me, my mom and my dad have abandoned me, no matter my situation, in that I will be confident. So let me ask the question again. Where does David get all this confidence from? We see it finally here in verse 45. Look, David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, Yahweh Sabaoth, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of this Philistine this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." You see what David is saying here? This is not an underdog story, because it's not David versus Goliath. It's God versus some schmo. That's it. That's the battle. It's not me and you, Goliath. It's you and him. My God is on our side. Why hasn't someone stepped up and taken out this fool? We've got God. What are we afraid of with? Let me go back to the picture that we started with. This is what everyone sees in the David and Goliath story. Like, oh, the poor little guy, let's cheer him on. But that is not the picture that David saw. Here's our big idea is not a statement today. You know, sometimes it's hard to come up with all the right words to make a big idea. So today's big idea is a picture, okay? So if you're taking notes, you can just draw a picture of this. This is what the world sees. This is the script that everyone is watching. But here's what David saw. Okay, that's Randy Johnson, one of the best pitchers ever. And Andre the Giant, just for good measure, in the corner. Okay? That is what my son saw in that moment. That's what David's seeing. Like, I don't see what the big deal is. Bunch of little junior hires. And my God, Randy Johnson's holding the baseball, too. Okay, that is not going to end well. Okay, so for those of you who want some words and not a picture, here's the big idea. Danger is only danger when God is factored out of the equation. It says that David ran toward Goliath. And he used a sling, okay? He takes him down with the first stone. He's like, whoa, that was easier than I thought. Awesome, God, you took him down in one. And then he goes over and he doesn't have a stone. All he has is four other rocks. And so he picks up Goliath's sword, chops off his head, holds up his head, ends up taking the head to Jerusalem. And then it says that David took Goliath's armor and like he hung it in his bedroom. His tent, okay? Wouldn't that be awesome to have in your bedroom as a teenager? Yeah. All that. So David ran toward Goliath, took him down. But the story comes back to this. David didn't see danger. All he saw was his God. See, everyone looks and we look at that picture and we're like, oh, your son's going down. He's got nothing. And here we are in like childlike faith. Jesus talking, unless you have the faith like a child. And so we've got God that's standing over us. This morning, are you afraid? Is there something that's causing you fear or anxiety? Usually fear is associated with losing something. Like, I'm afraid of losing my money. I'm afraid of losing my health. I'm afraid of losing my life. I'm afraid of losing my boyfriend or my girlfriend or my husband or my wife. Or I'm afraid of losing this dream that I have for my life. Fear usually is associated with loss. I'm afraid of losing my political power. As a voter, all of a sudden now I'm not the moral majority, and so I'm fearful. That's one maybe some of you have thought about this week. So you fear. You're afraid. But you guys, you should only be afraid if God is not in the picture. But if He is, what do you have to fear? Remember that song that we talked about, God, the wind and the waves, they still know His name. What it's saying is, it's alluding to that story of the disciples in the boat. Remember, and the storm comes and the boat's rocking and the disciples are like, we're going to die. Quick, wake up Jesus. And He's still yawning and He comes out to the edge of the boat, almost falling off. He's like, shh. And it stops. He calms the waves with a word. If Jesus is in your boat, you have nothing to be afraid of. And Jesus is kind of put out by their lack of faith. Like, guys, you have little faith. Like, we were going to die. Jesus is saying, I know, but I'm with you. What are you afraid of this morning? The only thing you have that matters can never be taken away from you. And that is your God. So Psalm 27, let me read the first two verses of that psalm that I referenced earlier. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Yahweh, the Lord. He is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? So Veritas, as we close this message, I want to give you an application this week. I think this would be a good way to apply this talk. Here it is. I want you to pray, hallowed be thy name, morning and evening. So this week, when you wake up and you go to bed, and hallowed be thy name comes from the Lord's Prayer. This is how Jesus taught us to pray. And what Jesus means when He teaches us, our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name, you know what He's saying? Factor God into your prayer. Don't look at life. It's like, it's me versus them, and I can't even get the ball to their feet. How am I ever going to win? He's like, look up. Hallowed be thy name. See who is on your side. The God of angel armies is standing over you. And Jesus says it this way in Matthew 10. Look at this. He says, you will be hated by all for my name's sake. You will be hated. Verse 28, but do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear Him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Jesus is saying, here's what you should be afraid of. Don't be afraid of being on the wrong side of history. Be afraid of being on the wrong side of me. Don't be afraid of someone who can just kill you. If someone is holding a gun and they point it at you, don't be afraid of them. All they can do is pull the trigger and kill you. That's it. But God, after killing you, can send you into an eternity of separation. And He's saying, don't be afraid of that junior hire. Fear God. Fear, like going to the other side and playing against Randy Johnston and Johnson in dodgeball. Fear that. Fear God. And some will get so overwhelmed by the junior hires on the other side, they'll be like, I'm afraid. I want to be on your guys' team. So they'll hop on over to the other side. I'm saying, you guys, if you are the last one standing and it's you and Jesus and you're holding to your faith and the world is mocking you because you believe in this guy that lived 2,000 years ago who died and raised from the dead, I'm saying you still outnumber them because you have God. I want to talk to you about the gospel. There was a son of David that came about 1,000 years after this event happened. And just outside of Jerusalem, a son of David fought another Goliath. And it was Jesus. But you know the crazy thing about the gospel story? The Jesus versus Goliath story? Goliath being Satan and death itself. Here's how Jesus fought Goliath. He comes down into the valley, in this valley of the shadow of death, and you know what he does? He picks up 5 stones and he hands them to the enemy, Goliath. And all of us are standing on both sides of the valley and our eyes get wide, and now this guy has a sword, a javelin, armor, and now he's got 5 stones. And you know what Jesus does? He holds out his arms. And he says, you go first. And Goliath slays Jesus. And then he takes his sword and he cuts off his head. And guess what happens? The crowd is... And in that moment, Jesus defeats the enemy. He conquers death itself. He is raised from the dead. You guys, there is a reality that all of us are going to have to face. Some of us fear death, and you know what? If you don't know Jesus, that's a good thing to be afraid of, because it is the reality that all of us in this room will die. And we will stand before God. And Jesus came. And the reason he did that was for you. He came to conquer sin and death for you, so that by faith in him, you can be in him. You can conquer death through his cross, through his burial and resurrection. Death became the means of God's final victory. And this application, hallowed be thy name, you know what's going to happen as you apply God's word and you say, all right, this week I'm going to pray hallowed be thy name. Here's what's going to happen. Your heart is going to be humbled. You're going to begin to fear God. And you know what that's going to do for you? That's going to give you the courage and strength to love your enemies and to pray for the people who mock you and persecute you. It's going to make you a kind person. The application to this is not, oh, you know what I'm going to do now? David versus Goliath. I'm going to get on Facebook and I'm going to go on this political rant and tell everyone what I really think. And I'm going to slay the giant. No, you know what the right response is, you guys? We saw it lived out this week. 9 brothers and sisters in Christ were murdered in a Bible study. I can't think of a Goliath that is bigger than racism. What an evil that exists in our culture and in our hearts. Oh. And as this murderer came in and killed 9 people in a Bible study, the families of the families of these victims were in the courtroom and they were in a hearing, and their murderer was before them on a video screen. And our brothers and sisters sat in that room and they said to the murderer, "We forgive you." And Goliath went down with love. Because that's the kind of application. Because these people feared God, they said, "Hallowed be thy name." The gospel had so transformed their hearts that they had the courage to fight racism and murder and evil with the love of God. That's what happens when the gospel gets in you. It gives you the courage to be bold for Jesus, but not mean for Jesus, right? That's the gospel. We see this picture. Why was David so confident? Because he knew God was on his side. If you don't know Jesus this morning, I would just invite you to trust him. Be on God's side, and you can only be on God's side through the gospel, through Jesus Christ. Let's pray together. Would love the worship team to come up and close us with this song that we began with. And as we pray, I want to ask you the question, what are you afraid of this morning? What are you staring at on the other side? I just want you to pray, "Hallowed be thy name. God, help me to factor you into the equation of my life. God, help me to see you. You're bigger than this thing that I'm afraid of." Let's just give it to the Lord. Just offer it to him.